Lake Effect continues on Milwaukee Public Radio. I'm Mitch Teich. If you knew your time on Earth was drawing to a close, who would you turn to try to find the answers to the big questions about life? For Irina, one of the characters at the heart of Jennifer Dubois' compelling new novel, the answer is a Russian chess player turned politician. There are a lot of quandaries at the heart of the book called A Partial History of Lost Causes, but Irina's big question is the same one her father wanted to know before he died. How do you keep going when you know you're going to lose, in chess as in life? Irina, who will likely die from Huntington's disease like her dad, leaves behind her life in Boston to find the answer. It turns out that her Russian hero is grappling with a very similar question as he pursues his underdog campaign for the Russian presidency. Jennifer Dubois joins us by phone to talk about the central themes of her book. Thanks for being with us.
Thank you so much for having me.
As I read this book, it struck me how adept you were at writing about three particular areas. There's a central question of the book, the one that sends Irina to Russia in search of Alexander. But then there is also your grasp of chess and your grasp of the former Soviet Union. So I guess the question I have is where this story started for you.
Sure. Well, the story of Irina, who is positive for Huntington's disease, which is this awful degenerative neurological condition that she watched her father die of, her story came from pretty personal origins, which was that my father had Alzheimer's disease, and he became ill when I was 12. So I grew up against the backdrop of a lot of pretty grim questions about how you proceed when you're in a situation you know is going to have a bad outcome. So that was kind of the origin of Irina's quest. And then, to be honest, chess was just something I was always interested in, and it became something I was interested in tackling narratively when I read about Garry Kasparov, who's the chess champion turned dissident in Russia. And I thought that the character arc of a chess player turning to politics was just really interesting and could really sustain an interesting novel. So that was sort of the origins for the chess and the Russia aspect. And then I just sort of threw myself into doing as much research as possible about Soviet eras and contemporary Russia as well. Just a lot of reading and a lot of, you know, trolling the internet for whatever I could find. And I've always been sort of a politics sort of nerd, and I was a poli-sci major in college, so I was very suited, I think, to writing a book that dealt with some pretty hefty political themes.
Well, and what to get back to Garry Kasparov and his similarity to Alexander, what seems like it would make chess and politics so juicy is that they are essentially metaphors for each other.
Exactly right. Yeah. I mean, obviously, chess served as a wonderful kind of vocabulary for a lot of the political as well as the philosophical concerns. But you're exactly right. The politics kind of reflects back on the chess and kind of becomes a metaphor for that. So I found that chess kind of imbued the book. It sort of infiltrated the book in a lot of realms, you know, from the alternating point of view chapters, which kind of feel a little bit like a chess game, like one player moves and then the next, to the ending, which, without giving too much away, has a certain chess logic to it, I think.
And I would imagine that once you start seeing chess metaphors, you might start to see them everywhere.
It's true. It's interesting. I mean, some of the chess stuff in this book is very intentional, and some of it, honestly, I look back, you know, now having written it, and see that there are certain motifs that I think I was only kind of half conscious of as I was writing. It's very interesting how, as a conceit, it kind of runs all the way through the book in ways that even I wasn't totally aware of as I was writing, I think.
Were you ever concerned about making the chess itself too technical? As I read this, I couldn't help but wonder whether there weren't metaphors or even just inside jokes or references that I might have gotten if I knew chess better, which is to say, knew it at all.
Yeah, it was a really tricky balance, of course, because on the one hand, I mightily feared getting the chess wrong, because obviously it's pretty audacious to be trying to write about, you know, a chess champion, and obviously my own chess knowledge and experience is so limited. So I was very, very afraid of giving it not enough attention. At the same time, I was mindful of the fact that, you know, not everybody is going to be riveted by reading a lot of chess. So I tried to sort of triangulate, and I sort of regarded it as an exercise in sports writing almost, where I tried to get enough of the sort of technical elements that would be of interest and also kind of grounded in some plausibility for those who are serious chess players, while trying to write about it in a way that it was imaginative and evocative and humorous enough that even if you weren't following the game move by move per se, you would still hopefully enjoy reading about the feel of the thing.
And if nothing else, I think many of us could relate to, in the first half of the book, Irina plays a number of games in Harvard Square in Boston or Cambridge against a Swedish chess player and manages to not get any better at all.
Right, yeah, she just kind of persistently, she's, you know, her relationship with chess is much like mine, where she just likes it a lot, but she kind of fails to make any progress over the years, but she's very drawn to it, kind of for all of its metaphorical content.
There's also the illness that you mentioned and the early death of Irina's father and the likelihood that Irina will also die of Huntington's disease that drive her to look for answers. You were talking about some of these difficult questions that sort of underpinned your own childhood. Give us a sense for what the seemingly simple question that Irina sets out to get answered.
The question she wants answered is sort of an impossible question to answer, which is how do you proceed when you're in the midst of a lost cause? And this is a question her father had posed to Alexander Bezatov, his chess hero, in a letter before he died. Never gotten an answer to, and then Irina, once her father dies, finds this unanswered letter and goes off to Russia to sort of seek the answer to this question.
You said you were 12 when your father was diagnosed with Alzheimer's, and I guess I wonder how much of those questions existed when you were 12 and onward, but how much of that do you think you were ever able to process at the time it was going on?
That's a really good question. I think that a lot of it kind of boiled down to watching over the years my mother's just such devoted and selfless and kind of bottomlessly kind and gentle care of my father through this illness from which he would never recover. And I think that, you know, watching her kind of take care of him every day and shave him and dress him and make sure that he was looking presentable and all of these things that that, you know, maybe didn't, you know, to some people's eyes, maybe didn't matter that much because he wasn't going to get better whether he was, you know, shaved every single day or not, you know. But watching her do that, I think, really taught me that, you know, even when there's no good outcome, there is so much that's important to do in the meantime. There's so much that a situation like that demands of us. And also there's a lot that it can give us. I mean, I think its blessings are very mixed and very dubious, but I think that there's a lot that it asks of us and a lot that it can grant us as well.
Well, and so Irina goes in search of Alexander, and we find out that Alexander might be grappling with, even if he's not aware of it, grappling with a lot of the same questions.
Exactly. He's running for president of Russia back in 2007 and 2008. And I don't think it's a spoiler alert to say that he does not win. and he knows that this is a very kind of, you know, nebulous prospect and that it's quite likely to get him killed, of course, in the very kind of brutal and corrupt Putin era. And so his political journey, his kind of quixotic political quest, in fact, is also raising the same questions and maybe also answering the same questions that Irina has.
Interestingly, Alexander's first response when he starts thinking about the big question, what to do when you're working on behalf of a losing cause, is to think back on a chess match that he played against a computer some years before.
Right. He plays and that too is based on Kasparov's match against Deep Blue,
right,
where, you know, Alexander, I think, comes to regard Putin in some ways as something like the Deep Blue computer game, where he's got all the answers ahead of time and things are really quite stacked in his favor.
There's another question that's wrapped up in throughout this book, actually, that I was hoping you might be able to speak to, and that's this question of identity and personhood, the question that Irina has about herself and her father, the question about whether the father that existed was the same as the father who she knew when he was dying.
Exactly, yeah, and this, I think, gets to kind of the heart of the philosophical question of the book. And I was a philosophy major, so I think there are some sort of kind of theory of mind type, you know, materialist versus, you know, dualist questions the book is dealing with. But Irina is very tormented by this question of, you know, if we are our brains, and that's, you know, that's certainly her concept, then when our brains change or when our brains falter, you know, are we still ourselves? What persists? How is personal identity tied to cognitive identity? And if you're a person with, you know, a pretty kind of materialist view of how brains and people work, then what does that mean for you if you change, or if you're altered, or if somebody you love is changed or altered? And I don't think that the book really has any answer to that question, but it's certainly something that I very much personally struggled with, you know, throughout my father's illness, and something that Irina is terribly, you know, vexed by and haunted by as well.
Well, and then there's this ultimate question that it seems like both Irina and Alexander are dealing with, and that is the question of whether they are both cowards at heart.
Exactly, and also whether even if they're not, whether you actually have the option not to be, in a way. And Irina, you know, talks about how, you know, she knows she has this illness, this fatality ahead of her, and sometimes people kind of remark on her bravery, but she knows herself to not really be brave. You don't, you know, there's not always the option of not being brave, because what can she do? She's afraid of death, and how is she going to, you know, to not be brave? She's not going to lie down and die, because that's what she's afraid of doing. And so it's interesting how they kind of, I think, are both characters who aren't necessarily cowards, but they're very afraid, and they also don't always have the option of acting on that fear.
Alexander uses the chess analogy, talking about being paralyzed by looking too many moves into the future.
Right, and what's interesting about the difference between their circumstances is that Alexander fears for his life because he fears an assassination attempt, which is a very legitimate worry. But he also can take certain precautions to try to save himself from that outcome. And so he winds up kind of hunkering down further and further into his apartment, kind of surrounded by this security apparatus, kind of afraid to do anything or go anywhere. Whereas Irina, because she actually can't do anything to escape what's coming for her, she, in a way, is a little bit more liberated in terms of what she does. And so those two different kind of situations speak to each other a little bit, and I think there's plenty that Irina learns from Alexander, but I think one thing Alexander sees in Irina is how the certainty of her fate is, in this strange paradoxical way, something, you know, something of a liberation, too.
Have you ever given thought to who you might turn to make sense of the world if you only had a short time left?
Well, I guess I would be. I guess I'd have to run away to Garry Kasparov or something and ask him. It's a good question. I don't think that I would do anything like this if I were in Irina's shoes. She's a very kind of isolated character, and kind of regards her personal relationships, as very kind of transient, and in a way they're not really the most important thing to her. So, in my case, I think I'm much more socialized and connected, so I think I would probably not do the choice, not make the choices she did, but it would also probably not be as interesting a story.
Well, and if nothing else, that question could be a good one for the party game edition of your book.
Right, exactly. Oh, yeah, makes a great party game book, I'm sure.
Well, Jennifer Dubois, it has been a real pleasure. Thank you so much for spending some time with us and sharing the story of this book.
Thank you so much for having me.
Jennifer Dubois' new novel is called A Partial History of Lost Causes, published by Random House. She's a graduate of the Iowa Writers' Workshop and currently teaches at Stanford University. We reached her by phone from Massachusetts. You can hear Jennifer Dubois read an excerpt from her novel at wuwm.com/lakeeffect. One more break, and then we'll meet the Canadian band The Trues, who are out to take the United States one club at a time. Lake Effect returns on Milwaukee Public Radio right after this.